Welcome to Wham Bam Tram. I'm James Ockenden, editor of Transit Jam, and today with co-host Alok Jain, and we're off to Shenzhen. We're always looking at the Shenzhen electric bus fleet with great envy. Today we're going to meet the Deputy General Manager of Shenzhen Bus, that's Joe Ma, and we'll learn about the realities of electric bus fleets and what lessons can be learned. First up, I'm with Martin Turner, chairman of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance. He's managed to cycle all the way here without falling into the sea, so let's go take a look at the news. So, Martin, what's the news from the world of transport this week?
Well, big change coming up in Europe. From the middle of next year, from July 2022, all new vehicles will be fitted with a speed limiter to stop the vehicle going above whatever the limit is in that area. There are cameras and sensors, map technology to determine what the current legal speed limit is.
It's not just limiting the speed of the car to, say, 70 miles an hour. It's actually intelligently applying.
Sure, and local... I think that's even real time. If there are temporary changes, then they'll be feeding off government data saying we've got roadworks here, slow down.
Oh, wow. That's really superb. I've often wondered how we've got these cars that can accelerate so fast that are not limited in any way. When we limit, we use geofencing and speed limiting on things like e-scooters around the world, where if they cross into a certain part of the city, they're immediately cut down to 5 miles an hour. So the technology is there. I've always wondered why we don't apply it to cars.
Yes, and well, I think we all know the answer, that the car driver is king, and any government that tries to interfere with people's right to zoom around in their special metal boxes is going to be voted out.
Yeah, I found that the Tesla ludicrous model, I mean, it's braking is less effective than its acceleration. So it can accelerate faster than it can brake.
Mm, that's a scary thought.
Its traction control can actually handle safe acceleration more than it can handle safe braking. I think that's an incredible fact.
Yeah. But it's got those crumple zones at the front of the vehicle, so that takes care of the safety issue.
Yeah, for the driver,
driver and the passengers.
So this speed limiter thing, I guess there'll be a market for people trying to override it, or...?
Well, actually, the driver can override the limiter if you press down extra hard on the accelerator past a kind of a limit.
Right.
But then you do get lots of little voices yelling at you, stop, slow down, you're going too fast, and something prodding you under the seat as well, I think.
Oh, there's actually a physical device, is there?
It's all haptic. Haptic is the adjective. We're going to have lots of haptic things. It means you can feel it.
Right.
So something's prodding you or bumping you or vibrating to tell you,
you're going too fast.
You're a naughty boy. That's a little switch comes slapping your side of your thigh.
What's it going to take for that to work? I think a slap across the face might do the job, but...
perhaps it's going to take a cultural change.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, speed limits and in this case, speed limiters that you can override all require that people know and basically do what they're supposed to do, and there's only a tiny minority who are then dealt with by society's approbation.
Thanks, Martin. And let's hope we get some of that technology application going with our smart city. Okay, let's go meet our guest. Joe Ma is in Shenzhen. Alok and I weren't quite up to doing 3 weeks quarantine to go meet him in person, so we're chatting via Zoom. Welcome, Joe. Welcome, Joe, to Wham Bam Tram. Very nice to meet you. And I'm here with Alok. Hello, Alok.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, James. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, James. Morning, Alok. Thank you for inviting me, James.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So you're in Shenzhen, we're both in Hong Kong. We can practically see each other, but there's a big gulf between us, unfortunately.
Well, there is. There's at least 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
We are separated by time, not separated by distance anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, we are big fans of the Shenzhen bus system in Hong Kong. We're very envious of it, I would say, because we see your electric bus fleet and we see our government going very slowly towards electric and now perhaps hydrogen. So can you just tell us quickly about, the background to the electric bus fleet for those who don't know?
Shenzhen is the first city in the world, I believe, to have gone 100% electric with the bus fleet as well as the electric taxis as well as electric buses. So we started back at about 10 years ago, 2009, 2010, something like that. We start off like, you know, there's a central government policy, 10 cities, 1,000 buses. So 10 cities, and Shenzhen being one of them, to implement electric buses and electric taxis. So we started back in 2009 with some hybrid buses first, you know, like that. And by 2011, we pushed out the first proper 100% electric bus fleet, a bus route running. That was to coincide with the University Games of 2011. Gradually, from 2011 to 2015, we tried out, you know, like we implemented more and more electric buses. And by 2015, which is when I first joined Shenzhen Bus, first thing I was asked to do is to look. You're gonna implement a full electric bus fleet by 2017. I was put in the place to be in charge of all the procurement, so quite a daunting task, you know, to change the entire fleet from, at that time we had about 1,000 something electric buses to change it all to 6,000 electric buses within 2 years. So that's what happened. With the electric taxis, we also completely changed the electric taxi fleet, the taxi fleet to electric. We've got about 5,000 taxis. Just to put things into perspective, where the whole city has about 16,000 buses and 22,000 taxis. So quite a daunting task, but I'm always saying that, you know, buying the buses and buying the fleet is easy, but you know, to build up the infrastructure is the most challenging part.
Yeah, no, indeed, Joe, and you have been really the flag bearer of this big effort that is happening in Shenzhen. But one of the reasons why people want to do this electrification is a direct impact on air quality, you know, and the improvement in air quality. And obviously in Hong Kong, we are also talking in the same context that electric buses may be able to improve the roadside air quality. What kind of impact has it had in Shenzhen?
It's absolutely essential, Alok, because you know, like many of the cities in China, you know, 10 years ago, terrible reputation of, you know, it's all like pollution in the city. So even like, you know, when I first came to Shenzhen, like say 15 years ago, you know, we didn't have electric buses then. The roadside air quality was really poor, and with the full electric bus fleet now that we have, we've seen a significant sort of reduction in the amount of emission. You know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of tons of CO2 emission per year being reduced because of the electric bus fleet. And importantly, there are other sort of like other emissions, but there are other benefits such as, you know, like the heat island effect that diesel engines can create for cities.
One of the reasons our government is going quite slowly is because it says it's not sure yet on the technology that will be of the future. So I don't know what it's waiting for. I think it's waiting almost for a sort of off the shelf, or at least some sign that yes, this technology will be the right one. But you guys didn't do that. So how did you actually select a technology? Did you just pick one, or was there any sort of one thing available back then?
Well, I mean, to be honest, the technology is always evolving. You know, like, you just have to take the dive and go for it. And, you know, what's the best technology you have at the time? That's my personal opinion.
And just as a matter of coincidence, James, actually, I was in Shenzhen with Joe at that time when they were having a fashion parade, literally, of buses. I don't know if you recall, Joe. That, yeah. You know, there were 5-10 companies, they had brought in their buses and we took ride in each one of them to see which one is better. The whole technical team went on those buses. So it was, I think that was, in a way, I mean, I think any new innovation requires certain amount of risk. And of course, sometimes the risk pays off, sometimes it doesn't. But in case of Shenzhen, what has been your, let's say, if the lessons to learn, you know, what have you learned from what you think you could have done it if you had known these things before, you could have done it differently?
Well, to be honest, I think you never know what's going to happen because, as I said, you just got to take a dive at, you know, at the time you do the thing, you know, what's available to you at the time. To look back, I think some of the things that we made mistakes as well. I don't think we could have done it any differently. Perhaps you could try sort of like small steps, but we were asked to do rapid transition. We weren't given the time to do it, so we didn't have that luxury. We just had to, you know, take the dive and go for it. Between 2010 and 2015, we had 5 years, or so we did try out different sort of like kind of, you know, in small batches, try out different technologies.
What was a small batch for you then?
The smallest child that we had was 100 electric taxis. That was a joint venture right. with BYD at the time. We celebrated, you know, the first taxi electric taxi company, which is a joint venture with BYD, as I mentioned. And then we didn't know anything about the electric taxis at the time. Having the manufacturer with you is holding your hand is a good thing. You know, like so. Like I always think it's important for any new technology that you have the OEM, you know, partnering with you, working side by side with you, because that's a two-way process, because they also learn from us. What kind of, you know, because we're on the front line, we're sort of like actually operating the taxis on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. So Joe, you are a Hong Kong lad, okay? So and you have worked in Hong Kong bus industry. Let me ask you, if you were to advise the government in Hong Kong with respect to these electrification of buses or decarbonization of buses, what is the message you would give them?
The message I would give would be to provide sites for charging facilities. That is the most crucial part. I mean, the upfront cost, we're talking about, people are talking about, you know, all electric, you know, the capital investment costs is maybe 2 or 3 times more than the diesel bus. But then you really recoup that cost afterwards in the operation, because the, you know, electricity price is a lot cheaper than diesel. And also, you know, the maintenance costs, you don't have a sort of like the, you know, compared with a diesel engine, you've got a lot less parts in an electric bus. But one thing that you need to take in consideration would be the battery replacement, because you know, battery degradation after maybe a few years, you do need to change the battery. But you factor that into the cost at the beginning. My advice would be to, you know, to the government would be, without the sites, it's really difficult for operators to do that themselves. So my experience with working in the industry is that, you know, the sites are usually called like the temporary sites, and, you know, like maybe 3 or 4 years, the government will give you the site for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, by the time you put in the infrastructure investment costs and all that, you know, you can't recoup that within such a short period.
We talked to Evan R. Young a couple of weeks ago from Civic Exchange, I'm sure you know, and he made the comment that, I don't know what his expertise in Shenzhen is, but the battery lives in the Shenzhen buses was not quite what was expected. And obviously there was a risk there, but, you know, is that the case, that the batteries are not lasting perhaps as long as the manufacturer had promised?
Well, they are lasting. They are a lot better now. You know, like in the earlier days, yes, the batteries was a major issue. And then so we put it into sort of like in our tender documentation and now in our procurement that we have to have the battery guarantee for a certain period of time.
Okay, and you said that's improved now. Is that a different battery technology, or is that just general improvements over time?
I think battery technology is one thing. Is, you know, the quality of the batteries, the production, and everything is you know, the way that we charge the batteries as well. That has major impact on how the battery operates.
And when we talk about battery, there are, of course, this whole range of, you know, we heard this whole entire alphabet soup there, LFP, LTO, NMC, and all those things. And I know this battery technology is evolving kind of every year. Now we are talking about cobalt-less batteries. What do you think is the best kind of battery that can be utilized for city bus infrastructure?
Well, the batteries that we're using now is lithium ion. That's what we're using, and it seems to be working quite well for us.
There's the idea in Hong Kong for this sort of shorter top-up charging, which obviously you wouldn't do in Shenzhen with the electricity prices. But what do you think about that idea of smaller batteries and more opportunistic or this pantograph system?
Well, it really depends on what kind of operation that you're looking at. You know, for instance, if you're running a solar, the thing with a pantograph is that the infrastructure on the roadside is a major requirement. And for short distances, you know, like, for example, if you're working in a small area, like, for example, at the airport, you could have a circular system, you could have a pantograph system. For longer routes, pantograph system may not be as good. For example, you're running from Tin Shui Wai to Central. You don't necessarily want to have a pantograph system stretching all that way. And also, you got to consider, you know, like the buses being deployed for different routes. So you want to have the flexibility of you know, having buses like this bus will work on this particular route one day, and then maybe the next day it's being deployed to work on a different route that doesn't have an underground system. I would say for us, you know, it's not like depot charging is the best technology that we for us.
So Joe, hydrogen is the new fashionable thing to talk about. And China has already announced that they will have 1 million hydrogen vehicles by 2030. Now, is this something that you are working on or Shenzhen Bus is looking at as a hydrogen, as another alternate fuel?
Yes, this is something that Shenzhen is looking at. I was talking to my friend who works for Eastern Bus yesterday, and then they've just put up five hydrogen buses for trialing at the moment. So yeah, hydrogen is definitely something that kind of technologies that we'll be looking into in the future.
I feel that our government is in Hong Kong is wary of building that electricity charging infrastructure just in case hydrogen turns out to be the thing. You know, it seems we're at this point. They may have waited too long, and now they've got to make a choice, quite a difficult choice. But do you think the hydrogen would replace the electric buses in Shenzhen?
Well, the hydrogen, the good thing about hydrogen is that it gives you much longer range. So maybe in the future there could be a combination of like the longer range services can use the hydrogen buses. Yeah. And the sort of in the city that you can use the electric buses. So the two technologies can go side by side.
What about cross boundary routes? I mean, we've got, you know, Carrie Lam here talking about Greater Bay Area every day. It's the integration is getting greater. How will we integrate two different transport systems if you're electric and we're hydrogen, or you know, vice versa?
Well, I mentioned just now, you know, the intercity could be hydrogen. You know, the intercity buses between Hong Kong and Shenzhen, they could consider using hydrogen, which gives us like, you know, they can work throughout the whole day, and you know, like compared to the electric, which need to be charged off after 200 kilometers.
But Joe, do you see a day where, you know, we will have a GBA bus company, as in, you know, the buses would be carrying us from, let's say, Central to Futian? You know, I can go sit there direct. It's a borderless travel kind of thing. Do you envisage a day like that, that we will have that kind of a footprint of a bus company?
I can't see it in the immediate term, unless there is something, you know, like, because we operate on two very different systems anyway. The system in Shenzhen is heavily subsidized by government, and the system in Hong Kong is very much run by the private sector. So unless I love to see that marriage, you know, like what you're talking about, one bus can get you from all the way from Central all the way into Futian.
Yeah. Technology, Joe. I mean, we are talking a lot about technology these days, all around the world, digitalization and using this app and that app and so on and so forth. And I think even in those areas, Hong Kong has been a bit, we are doing a bit of a catch-up role at the moment. But what are the things that you are doing in Shenzhen in terms of technological user interfaces or technological efficiency intervention, which something that Hong Kong can learn from?
Well, Shenzhen is very famous for implementing a lot of technologies. I mean, we've been using cashless payment for, you know, God knows how many years now. We've been using Alipay and WeChat Pay and all that, you know. So nowadays, nobody carries a wallet, and you know, everybody, you know, even, you know, like you go to the shop, you do anything, you just carry your phone, and you don't have cash. That's one thing that Hong Kong is lagging behind. I was back in Hong Kong last month, and you know, first time I carried cash for like nearly 2 years, and I've been stuck in Shenzhen the last 20 months before that because of the COVID situation. So having a wallet and, you know, like this is a very, very strange thing for me. The other thing would be, you know, the sort of like for public transportation would be all the other technologies, you know, the ADAS system, you know, to reduce accidents on the road, and, you know, maybe the monitor road situation, and, you know, like to help the drivers to sort of like to drive safely. The kind of warning system that we have for pedestrians is something that I think would be worth putting into and looking into as well.
Okay. And one thing people say about Hong Kong is it's too hilly and the climate is too bad for electric buses. But obviously, across the border, you've got the same climate. What about the hills? Do you have the same hill problem in Shenzhen?
Well, we don't have the hills problem that you have in places like, you know, in central, or in Hong Kong Island. You know, you're going up to the mid-level, you go up to the peak. I think by running maybe smaller electric buses, that can help. I can see it can be an issue. But, nowadays, I think technologies can overcome that. Yeah.
Okay, Joe, I think we have run out of time, sadly. So we're going to have to say goodbye. And thanks very much for telling us about the Shenzhen bus system. We hope to actually come over and see it again soon. So, but probably not for another year.
Okay.
Thanks a lot then, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Terrific stuff and a lot we can learn from just over the border. Now, next week, an old friend to Wham Bam Tram, Julian Kwong, a road safety expert, advisor to the United Nations. We caught him over the summer for our podcast and had a great chat. Well worth a listen if you get a chance to find Wham Bam Tram on Apple or Google Podcasts. But next week, we'll be talking specifically with Julian about the UN Global Decade of Action on Road Safety. That's next week on Wham Bam Tram. See you then.